Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am thrilled to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week two guests from Portland, Oregon, where there is a possible strike brewing, in any case, negotiations ongoing between the teachers of Portland, Oregon's schools and the school district. Eric McCartney is with us. He is a member of the Portland Association of Teachers. He has been teaching for over 6 years and now teaches fifth grade at Kelly Elementary School. Also has a child who's a student in the eighth grade in Portland schools. A website you can check out is pdxteachers.org. Meredith Reese is also with us, a longtime community activist, a member of the Portland Teacher Solidarity Campaign, which is a grassroots group of students, parents, teachers, and community members who have come together to stand in solidarity with Portland's teachers. A website you can check out is teachersandparentstogether.com. Eric and Meredith, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks.
What is the essence of the dispute? What does the school district want to do, and what is it that the teachers and the students and the community want?
It began the initial negotiations, some of the first proposals coming from Portland Public Schools were a massive list of takebacks from our existing contract, which expired last spring, actually. So we're technically working without a contract right now. But there was a list of about 120, close to 120 takebacks from our existing contract. And that was the very first proposal from them.
What's a takeback? Benefits removed, salaries cut?
Yeah, they've taken language from our existing contract and either removed it so that the benefit or compensation is not there, or they've changed the wording so that it changes it so it's not, again, the result is the same, so that, you know, we lose whatever it is. I mean, you know, a couple of examples were they've proposed to put a cap on insurance premiums, which would increase the amount that union members are paying every month. If they do that, they want to eliminate early retirement benefits. I mean, there's a list of things, some small that are certainly negotiable, and others fairly, you know, important. Our union has said all along that they are not going to accept a contract that holds any union member, you know, financially harmed. We want to come out of this at least breaking even. You know, we don't want to have a new contract, start working, only to be making, you know, considerably less money as we go along, because a lot of us are barely making it as it is.
Now, Chicago tried to do this to their teachers a couple of years ago, and it didn't go over very well, as I recall, and there was a big strike. Are people looking at that example?
It is something that that everyone is thinking about, yeah.
And I can come in on that, too, just from the solidarity campaign. We're drawing our inspiration directly from Chicago. And there was a CTU solidarity campaign of community members and teachers and students, parents, who supported the Chicago teachers and really went beyond and helped to connect their contract demands with community demands, which is something that the concept of fighting for schools that students deserve, I think, which is what the Portland teachers are talking about, is something they did in Chicago as well, saying that the teachers' working conditions are the students' learning conditions. And that's something that parents and students are very well aware of. So we also saw it as an opportunity, as in Chicago, to both work in solidarity with the teachers and their contract demands, which is so important given all the cuts we've had in the past decades in Oregon, but also to start to talk about what we really need in education even beyond this contract, because we know that hopefully we'll win a good contract for teachers and an improvement over years of concessions, but we also know that there are longer-term issues in the schools, and we think that teachers, parents, students are the ones who are going to have to get together and figure out how to turn back the clock on some of these education reforms.
Meredith, the students and community members have been showing a good deal of support, as I understand. What sort of engagement has there been?
Sure. Well, I think the most exciting support has really come from students organizing themselves, and that's through the Portland Student Union. They started out a couple years ago, actually, in the last year or so, just protesting, raising awareness about the budget cuts that were happening around Portland schools, on a Portland schools and statewide schools. Also, have taken a strong stance on test scores, and so these students, you know, definitely as community members, we were very excited by the fact that they were organizing amongst themselves and talking about what kind of school they needed, and what kind of things were especially important to them in the teacher's demands, like smaller class sizes, more equity in where resources are devoted. And so some of the things they'd done in early January that were especially exciting is they have been going on a series of walkouts in their schools, sometimes walking back into the classroom as well, which is not something you would expect from high school students, saying that they're going to come back into class and try to be the best students they can be to support the teachers. And that culminated with the students and supporters packing the school board on January 13th. Really, everyone squeezing in there, and the students tried to tell their demands to the school board, you know, tell them what it was that they had come up with that they wanted. Their main point being that all of these things, everyone speaks in favor of the students, you know, especially school board members. We're doing this for the students, is often what they say, but the students said, nobody asked us. Nobody asked us what it is we really need and our challenges in education, and so that was their point. And I think notably, most of the school board, except for our one school board hero, Steve Buell, the rest of the school board walked out when the students came in to do that. So that's just an example of the kind of solidarity. Others, there's signs everywhere in people's cars and businesses, a lot of business supporters. There have been some clandestine actions that have gotten a lot of attention, like pink flamingos in school board members' yards. And those are kind of funny ways of getting the message out that there's people here who are negotiating that really aren't negotiating, that kind of see themselves, as they did in Reynolds a couple years back and as they did in Chicago, see them their main job on the school board as being to fight the union and kind of blame the union for what's gone on in education over the years. And most people in the community just know that that's not the case, that it's not that the teachers are actually some of the best advocates for our students, and the students definitely understand that. At this point, though, mostly the message that we're sending is we're going to support what the bargaining team and the teachers want, whether that's a strike or, you know, whatever that is, whatever people think they deserve, we think they deserve that and more. And we're going to actually continue to work with the community in turning things around for the school.
It's remarkable for a school board that talks about serving the students to get up and walk out of their own meeting when the students want to have something to say. I understand that the Portland Association of Teachers last year turned down President Obama's race to the top scheme of accountability, as they call it, for schools. Has this resistance been growing for some time?
Yeah, I think so. I think with the ever-increasing pressure for our kids not to have a better education. No, the increasing pressure is to have better test scores on these standardized, you know, state tests. I don't hear conversations amongst the administration about what does a well-rounded education look like, or, you know, how is it we can truly meet the needs of our vast array of types of students? How can we reduce class size? Currently, I have a class size of 31 students. Last year, I started with 34, and I'm in a Title I school where, you know, I come in. I have students right now. This year, I have students who are at an academic level at around first grade. I have a couple of them.
And you're teaching fifth grade.
I'm teaching fifth grade. Yeah. So I mean, there's a huge spectrum of abilities that you have to try and hit throughout the year, and that is, you know, extremely difficult when you're when you're looking at a class size of 30 plus without any sort of assistance. I don't have any, you know, educational assistants or paraprofessionals or anything. I'm in there by myself all day long.
So you're trying to put a class size limitation into your contract? Is that would that be unprecedented? Yeah. Has that been done?
Well, not here. Basically, the school district has been in the past unwilling to basically define the term workload. When we're talking workload in terms of educators, we're talking about, for classroom teachers like myself, we're talking, you know, the number of students that we serve you know, daily. But we're also talking about special education teachers. They have their workloads, you know, are really high as well. There's only so many, you know, instructional minutes in a day. And at our school, where we have almost 650 students, we have one full-time special ed teacher and a half-time special ed teacher. And trying to get all of our students who need those individualized specialized services to get those out is extremely difficult. So we're trying to get, you know, those workloads so that rather than our special ed teacher having 80 kids to try and service throughout the year, you know, we can reduce that to an actual manageable amount where, first of all, the interventions are successful and meaningful, and secondly, so they can even have the time to do it at all. And then that goes with school psychologists as well. I mean, they have a caseload. Counselors, they have a caseload. And the expectation of getting the services to the students who need it the most is unrealistic when, you know, you simply don't have the time to do it or to do it, you know, well. And that's just been a huge frustration for a long time here. And the district is very hesitant to come up with some sort of definition. I mean, they're certainly not willing to say, well, you know, we'll guarantee, you know, classroom size, you know, will not exceed, you know, 30 or whatever. They don't want to do that because then that limits, you know, where they can put teachers and how many, and they don't want to relinquish, you know, that kind of control. It's near as we can tell. So
I saw a video of a press conference you guys put together where one of your fellow teachers was talking about a student banging their head against the wall repeatedly, and the teacher phoned someone for help and was told there's no one to come help you deal with it.
Yeah.
That's an extreme case, I am assuming. I mean, this is...
And I want to just clarify, you know, the PAT, the union, didn't put that press conference on. Their focus right now is mainly on bargaining, quite frankly, and organizing with teachers. But the Solidarity Campaign was able to put that on and get teachers just and parents together and talk about what this really means when you're a teacher in the classroom and you don't have the resources and you don't have the time to provide that individual attention. And these are not people who got into the profession to make a lot of money. You know, so it's also very traumatic for teachers to not be able to help their students, to not be able to have the time to refer students to resources that often aren't there. And that kind of isolation in the classroom is something we think the solidarity and the community attention around is going to be really key towards that. Unlike a lot of people pointing their fingers at teachers, we are getting the story out there about how the classrooms really are. And that's what parents and students know, but we think everybody needs to know. That the teachers are when this teacher, Kim, who spoke at the press conference, when I first met her, I almost cried because she was so passionate about needing help and having none, and how that made her feel like a failure. And I think the students feel like failures too. And that's something that one of our student union members, Sakai Edwards, talked about in press conferences as well. She was also there about, you know, these schools are labeled as failing, and the students are also told that it's their fault that the schools aren't working. And so we're really trying to change the message that there's another reason why the schools aren't working, and we need to address that. We need to address where the money is spent. And on that note, one of the most recent things that has come out is that there's actually at least $20 million in extra money that this district is sitting on. While we're all fighting for scraps, really, to get decent class sizes, they're sitting on this extra money. And so that just tells you there's something else here that's a priority, other than the students and other than teachers working positions.
I'd also like to
go ahead.
You know, talk about that. What Meredith just said. It's true. When you talk to teachers, and I see it in my building, like I said, it's a fairly, I'm a kindergarten through fifth grade building, so it's K-5, but it's a huge number of kids, you know, like I said, almost 650 kids. It's a Title I school, so the majority, the overwhelming majority of those students come from families who get free or reduced lunch from the government. And so there's poverty is a huge problem in our population. English as a second language is a big problem. We have a lot of parents who have limited English proficiency, and it does. It does make me feel like a failure every day when I see what my students are going through and what I know I can't do. I often can't teach the way I know would be most effective for some of my students, because my schedule has been determined by someone above me, and the exact way, the exact methods that I'm supposed to use have often been, explained that this is how I need to do it. And I know that those kids are not getting additional services that they need. The kids in my school, these families are dealing with awful situations. Parents in prison, drug and alcohol abuse, homelessness, gangs. I mean, it's horrible. I sat yesterday. One of my students, who came in a little bit after the start of the school year, she came in and we sat down. It was a writer's conference. I was going over a paper that she had written, and it was a personal narrative, and it got her talking about her winter break and her home life and things. She talked to me for over half an hour. She talked through my lunch period because she needed it. And I listened and was heartbroken by what I heard, but she needed that. And a lot of our kids need that sort of attention and that sort of ear, and they don't get it. And then you put them in a computer lab and tell them, okay, now you have to do your best, and your score determines how well our school does. And our school is labeled a failing school if you don't pass this one test. No pressure. You know, it's ridiculous. And it makes all of us feel like we're failing, even though the teachers in my building are the hardest working teachers I have ever met. And we're doing amazing work, despite the limitations that we're working under. But yeah, there is that sense of failure all around.
In the corporate media, where we don't hear these stories very often, we hear about greedy teachers and teachers destroying the budget and so forth. I'm guessing, Meredith, when you go out into the community and talk about wanting smaller class sizes, there's not a lot of opposition. There's not a lot of organized demand for larger class sizes and worse educations in families in Portland, Oregon, is there?
No, but it's interesting when we talk about Oregon is ranked one of the worst in terms of our class sizes. I think fifth worst in the country. And when we talk about the Portland schools, which are the most diverse schools in Oregon, the reaction from some people has been to point out that Beaverton schools, which is west of Portland, are much worse. And this is definitely true. I mean, Beaverton teachers just lost a big contract recently. The schools were massively redistributed in terms of where teachers could be, and class sizes have ballooned. Yes, it's definitely worse there. Sometimes I think the most unfriendly argument I've heard community people say is just, so, well, it could be a lot worse. And to me, that's not, those teachers should have struck. You know, those teachers should. That community needs to fight harder to get, I mean, even just the tax revenue. I mean, in our case in Portland, the money is there. You know, that's not the issue. In Beaverton and other counties, you know, there are some real budgetary issues because there's so many tax breaks for companies like Nike and Intel. You know, of course, those tax breaks affect everyone in the state, but, you know, in Portland, the money actually is there. So it seems that there's something going on just beyond the money. So whenever people bring up, oh, but the cost to the taxpayers, you have to point out, most of the time, it's not a lack of money. It's that, you know, they're spending money on this consultant. They have Yvonne Deckard. She makes $15,000 a month for the district. You know, they've got this revolving door. We're familiar with it on the federal level between government officials and consultants and private companies. But even on the local level with our school board members and this consultant they've hired, it seems like there's something larger, a larger attack, and it's not just in education. So a lot of people that we talk to, I guess the question is more, how do we actually fix something that's so big, that goes beyond Portland, goes beyond our school, that is all across the country, and is in many different public sector areas? You know, how can I focus on the teacher contract right now with everything that's happening? And I think my response to them is always, well, we have to start somewhere. And I think if there's anything, if you care about these services and you care about education everywhere, I think, or you care about labor rights, I mean, something as basic as that, and in unions, the teachers are such an obvious place to start, because teachers are so invaluable to the community. I mean, they really, they tie together everyone in the community in one way or another. The schools are supposed to be areas in our neighborhoods that unite us together, that help us cultivate future leaders, right? And I think that the teachers and their struggle to make schools better should be an inspiration for other unions as well, and not just other people without unions who want to see their industry, their public services do better. Because I think we've lived in decades where things have kind of gone downhill, and actually what's kind of interesting is that the students, they've grown up in it. You know, they've grown up in an era of No Child Left Behind and privatization, and they're against the wall. The jobs are not there that they were promised. And so they're really asking the bigger questions, maybe before the rest of us even, about what's it going to take so that every single teacher contract is not as prolonged as this. Because it's like, if you read the Oregonian, there's a great article, for once, that talks about all the different very contentious teacher contracts, and I think over the years, and the various things that have kept them from going to a strike. I think now it's qualitatively different. You know, supposedly the economy is recovering, right? We're not taking shared sacrifices anymore, and yet that's exactly the posture that the district has copied from many other places. I think that's also given the teachers a little more confidence to stand up for themselves, and they have been taking these concessions for years. But it's also starting to open up the bigger questions: how can we start turning this around, right? Because we cannot expect, you know, another big concession or another, as the Oregonian puts it, white knight to come in and save the negotiations. I mean, something does have to give here to improve our schools. I mean, just recently, people know in Portland that the Jefferson Cluster in North Northeast Portland, which is historically an African American neighborhood school system, historically, in the last 3 years or so, they've had lots of school closures and privatizations happen there. And I think the sense that what's happened in Chicago, New York, and other places where privatization has come in and schools have closed is happening here in Portland as well. So this year it feels like not just how are we going to win this contract, but how are we going to keep them from continuing to start, be this aggressive every time the teachers need their contract renewed.
We have just a few minutes.
How are we going to also move those lessons to other places too, where people feel under attack right now, and to get the world really our students deserve to live in, as well as the school.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Eric, that is the profit motive here, isn't it? That when these schools are labeled failures and then they close, it boosts private education, as well as the profit motive in pushing deunionization and so-called right to work or no right to a union shop. Somebody stands to gain from all of this, do they not?
Well, it would seem that way. You know, don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but you know, if you follow the money, you know, that's usually where you're going to get your answer. But it is interesting, as Meredith said, that I think this year is the first in quite a few where the budget really shouldn't be the sticking point, shouldn't be the issue.
They're sitting on money, right?
We're sitting on money, and if their mission truly is to provide the best, you know, education for Portland students, well, you know, hey, I hate to be the one to break it to them, but you know, it doesn't come free. You know, it costs money to make this system work, but you've got to put it in the right place. You know, it
costs less than putting them in prison or sending them to war. So it's a choice you got to make.
It is. You know, and one of the issues in the contract, the district wants to eliminate these early retirement benefits for teachers who've taught within the district for, I believe, over 20 years. You know, it's got to be a certain amount of time, but they want to eliminate this benefit altogether. But what the funny thing is that those early retirement benefits actually save the district money. They can save the district anywhere from, I think, $1 to $2.5 million, as they've tabulated it out, because you're replacing an experienced teacher who's very far over on the pay scale lane, who's making a lot more than an incoming, you know, first-year teacher would be making. And also there's less benefits. So once you replace those people out, it actually saves the district money. So our bargaining team was told that from the school board that was one of their top priorities, was to eliminate this early retirement benefit out of the contract. And for months, they didn't know, they couldn't explain why they wanted to get rid of it. And then they did say at one point, well, all the other unions that the district works with we've gotten rid of it for them. You know, and we're talking, you know, all the other, you know, custodial and so whatever the other unions are. And they said it wouldn't be fair to them if you guys kept that early retirement. And that, you know, and it's like, well, but that's a ridiculous reason, you know, to get rid of something that's saving you money in the first place. It doesn't make sense.
It's a race to the bottom, and they call it a race to the top.
It does feel that way.
Yeah. Eric McCartney and Meredith Reese, it is wonderful what both of you are doing. Eric McCartney is a member of the Portland Association of Teachers. You can learn more at pdxteachers.org. Meredith Reese is working with the Portland Teacher Solidarity Campaign. And one good website is teachersandparentstogether.com. Eric and Meredith, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio. This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.